What is the hardest thing about running a pizzeria? Is it hiring employees?
And then he responds back to me in email and says, great, Drew, but I really need 40 hours a week and I need to be making $30 an hour.
Or is it managing customer expectations when there's a 75-minute wait?
Like, everybody comes in at the same time. Everybody's coming in between 6:30 and 7:30. That night, I may have lost 4 people tops.
Today, Drew Butler joins us back on the show. He runs Market Pizza by Drew. He's a fairly new operator in the pizza scene, but he's here to report back on what it's like to be in the trenches.
Those definitely saved me, because if I didn't have 12 par bakes that night, I wouldn't even have had enough space on the ticket holder.
You're listening to the What's Good Dough podcast, and it's your boy, Idriff. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And remember to always ask, what's good dough? Before we continue on with the episode, I want to give a special shout out to Cordo Olive Oil. Truly, 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 the difference between commodity olive oil and quality olive oil is night and day. And that's why the best pizza makers like John Arena, Chris Decker, and Laura Meyer use Cordo Olive Oil at their restaurant. DM me at What's Good Dough or email me idriff@whatsgooddough.com and I will set you up with a free tasting if you are an operator. And I'm talking about brick and mortar, caterer, pop-up, anything like that. I'll connect you and get you a free tasting. Thank you for supporting my show sponsors.
Initially, just wanted to talk to you about the par bake situation, but I feel like I want to entertain the idea of having a little bit more of a casual conversation with folks and seeing how that goes. And we're in person in downtown San Jose at a park with coffee. And so, I mean, could you ask for a better environment?
No, I mean, really, like, I'm sure on some levels, these are the kind of conversations you want to have.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that it's casual. It's just that it's not scripted. It's, you know, it doesn't have a place that it has to or wants to go. It just is what it is. And so, you know, it's natural, I guess, is what you call it.
I like that. And what's natural about today? Today's world, employment is still very hard. And we were just talking about how you are now running a solo operation due to a couple of circumstances. Your one employee left after a little bit of misunderstanding, it seems. And then your son went off to Colorado, who also helped you out. And maybe we save folks the long story about the drama or so. But knowing now that you have a hard time ahead of you, you may have to run a solo operation, or you may have to go into hiring somebody. What is your next move?
Well, the next move, again, as I said earlier, is the hard move. It's the challenge move. It's the move that I don't want to make. You know, hiring has been a process that has been uncomfortable because I've never really done it before. So the first time that I put an ad in Craigslist, I mean, just even the quality of applicants, the way the applicants approach you, you know, for instance, I was asking for like 3 pieces of information, like, if you have a resume, include it.
Sure.
Not everybody does. So if you don't have a resume, just let me know, you know, what experience you may or may not have.
Okay.
Tell me why you want a job in pizza.
Sure.
And let me know what your availability is so I can start to see whether there's any fit at all, right? And then you would get someone that would just send you a resume, wouldn't even say hello.
Okay.
Right, so they've missed 2 out of the 3 things that you're asking for.
Okay.
Or, you know, not to get any further into that, that was the whole thing, was like, I'm giving you very specific information to follow. You can't even follow instructions from the get-go.
Yeah.
How am I going to bring you in and actually train you to do something?
I have hired maybe 15 people before. I probably hired like at least 8 people through my nonprofit. I've hired at least 5 virtual assistants, and I've hired 2 nannies. Okay? And I've also heard some of like the advice online, which I choose to live by. Hire for attitude, train for aptitude, right? But you're right. If you are giving me bad vibes from the get, like you can't read the directions, sucks. And I've also hired through Craigslist before. Where I have been successful is outside of Craigslist. And I'll leave it at that and maybe pass it and see what you're thinking.
Yeah, no, I think it's, from what I've experienced, I think Craigslist is a numbers game. You wake up on a Monday morning and you're like, okay, I gotta apply for jobs. You throw 10, 12 darts against the board, knowing full well you're not even gonna hear back from most people. So it's a numbers game for both sides.
Yeah.
So, okay, finally, finally someone contacts you. I tried to make it a habit, a golden rule situation, that if you actually sent me something, that no matter what, I would say, hey, we got your materials. If your qualifications line up with what we're looking for, we'll contact you back, right? And sometimes I was like, it was a little bit of a delay tactic so that, I would send people that and then I would take a look at how many people I do have and then I would figure out who I'd want to take it to the next level. The first round that I did this, technically the second round, because the first round, I literally didn't even have anybody that I wanted to bring in.
Yeah.
The second round, after I finally brought some people in, I brought people in for in-person interviews right off the bat because, like I said earlier, I'm kind of an in-person guy. I want to see what your vibe is. And I brought in, I believe, three people. One was an older lady that I just really questioned whether she was going to have the energy to be in this very small place that the work gets real.
Small place, fast pace.
And then there was another guy that came in who had worked in a pizza place in Culver City near me that I respected. He wasn't there for very long. I believe he was there for less than 6 months. And I got a really good vibe from this guy. You know, I've listened to, a couple suggestions on, what type of questions to ask. And those fun non-business questions to kind of get to know someone, build rapport. So one of them is like, what's your favorite book? My now thing now is I ask, what's your favorite book, television show, or movie, right? To like get into it, let's start rolling. And this guy, it was either Think and Grow Rich or How to Win Friends and Influence People, or it was some book that I already liked. So the rapport is building, and this guy was sounding really good. I mean, we were bonding. He was talking a good game. And another question that I ask on my little, like when you sit down at the interview, like here's six questions. One of those questions is, how many hours do you want to be working? And what is the pay that you're expecting, right?
Yeah.
To see if, we're in the same, ballpark, right? So he told me that he was looking for a minimum of 20 hours a week. And that, $25 an hour was kind of where he wanted to be. He was a little bit more on the almost the assistant manager side of things. And so we wrapped up the interview. Things went great. I said, I'm interviewing other candidates over the course of this weekend, and I'll get back to you on Monday, right? This was probably a Friday. And then by the time like Saturday rolls around, like I liked this guy. I wanted to offer him a position. There was no reason to keep him waiting, hanging out, wondering what's up. So I said, hey, I want to offer you a position. We're going to start at training at, minimum wage. We'll spend a few days there and then I'll bump you up to 18, 20, whatever I told him, right? And then he responds back to me in email and says, great, Drew, but I really need 40 hours a week and I need to be making $30 an hour.
What the hell?
And I was like, wait a minute. Like, okay. Like you told me this 2 days ago that you were looking for 20 and $25 an hour. And now all of a sudden you need 20 more hours and you need $5 more an hour. And I'm like,
I wonder if that tactic works.
That
on the
really,
employment side.
That really got me thinking. And then I started doing the math and I was like, if I pay this guy $30 an hour at 40 hours a week, that's $1,200. And I'm averaging like $1,000 in sales. Well, no, I'm averaging more around the $2,000 in sales per week at that point. I'm like, okay, there's another one of these situations where I'm about to get myself into a situation where I'm paying 50% labor costs. I don't think that's sustainable in any business, right?
This podcast is brought to you by my favorite pizza cheese for Detroit-style pizza, and I'm talking about Baccio cheese. It's perfect for that aesthetically pleasing high crown Frico edge. Brett of Izzy's Pizza Bus is also a Baccio user. He says he loves it for its quality, price, and the fact that they have a rewards program. Gold Club rewards members can receive cash back for every pound of cheese purchased. Get that cheese, Pizza Pal. Learn more at BaccioCheese.com. The holiday season is upon us, and I don't know of a better gift than an Uni pizza oven. Right now, they have some amazing products like the Uni Volt 12, which can get up to 950 degrees Fahrenheit indoors, all electric, baby. It's made some amazing pizzas in my household, and I truly recommend it for ease of use cooking and super hot temperatures that you can control from both top and bottom. Uni has all of the ovens that you could ever need to start your pizza business, so go ahead and check them out. The link is in the show notes. Thank you for supporting my show sponsors.
Yeah, but generally speaking, rule of thumb, whatever the case may be, 50% is maybe not the best business model.
No.
Right? But what if he ran everything and the $1,000 extra was just going to everything else and you keep it?
I mean, you know, just like you said, depending on the situation, depending on the business model, meaning like, okay, if I'm walking away here hands clean and now I'm working on store number two,
right?
Yes, you take a lot less of the pie.
Sure.
You share the pie because now, instead of you trading your time for money, you're trading their time for money, which, trust me, I've told you, that's where I want to go.
Yeah.
Just to wrap up with him, I'm a big believer in negotiation. I'm a big believer in let's truly make this a win-win.
Yeah.
So instead of initially just thinking like, hey, man, this guy just bait and switched me, I'm blowing him out.
Yeah.
I said, hey, you know what? I can see, and you know, a lot of times I'm with seeing things about halfway, you know, either as a starting point or a finishing point. But I kind of just said to him, hey, you know, I got 20 hours a week I can offer you right now. And I didn't negotiate at all on the price. You said you wanted to be making 25. I could offer you that. And he let me know that it wasn't going to work out. And thank goodness it didn't, because that guy would have
bankrupted you.
He would have bankrupted me. Right. Exactly. That's the term.
I think they're like, negotiations are fine, but there is going to be a point where you just have to put your foot down. And I'm glad you did, because it can hurt you. I dealt with a couple of VAs that were helping editing my podcast, and they just wanted so much. Right? And I was like, okay, let's try it out. Right? Let's go through the training. Let's do this. Let's do that. And after months and months and months and months and months of working with me, I was paying a premium. And when I said, okay, we've done all this training, I've been paying you this price, can we up the production now that you have all the systems down? They basically told me no. Like, this is what we've been doing for 6 months. I'm not gonna up the deliverables for the same price that we've been doing. And it kind of just like, I shot myself in the foot, right? And another person, Armin, who does Dracari's Pizza, noted in our conversation together, the people that you negotiate with and that negotiate heavy, you're just gonna have a lot of problems with them. Right? They're going to try to cheap out. They're going to try to do as little as possible to make it so that they end up winning. And I wonder, when you say the whole like win-win situation, like, what do people want today? Do they want a salary? Do they want fulfillment? Do they want a bonus at the end of the year? Do they want ownership? Like, what do you think will help solve this crisis, this employment crisis? Because it doesn't seem like people who chase money, the 25 versus 30, they're only going to leave you for the place that pays them 32. Right? So I don't know what, I mean, and maybe you don't know the answer because you're still trying to figure it out, but what do you think is the ideal?
Well, you know, if I start with what I know and what I want, and at least offer that as being the starting point for what I'm trying to do. For instance, you know, there's a reason why I ask you how much money that you want to be making, because you know what you've made in the past. You maybe have an idea of what your value is, and you know a number that's going to keep you happy in the current situation versus getting yourself into some place that you're not being paid what you think you're worth, and then you're just looking for a job the very next day, interviewing behind people's back and waiting to get the next opportunity. You know, so pay is important, respect is important. I think time off and flexibility and, you know, like for instance, at one point, Anita was working 3 days a week, and I said, you know, well, would you rather be working eights or tens? Because if I had my choice, I would be working four tens in a 40-hour week than eight fives. I mean, even to the point where, like, if you could be working three 12s, and now all of a sudden you've flipped the time off in, you know, in your favor.
Oh, yeah.
Like I said earlier, man, our jobs are important, but isn't time with our family more important? Isn't time on vacation more important?
I mean, I look at it like, if I have to be at somewhere for 8 hours, right, I am dedicating that entire day to be there, right? It's like, that's my primary focus. And so to be clear on Thursday and know that I don't have to be at work because I put in a bunch of hours Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I have all of Thursday to be dedicated to something else, whatever that may be, that is my preference.
I'm all about the 4-day work week. When I was teaching, I didn't have PE classes on Friday, and one of my buddies pointed out, oh, you have a 3-day weekend every weekend. And when he put it to me that way, I was like, wow, I like that. And yeah, the pizza shop is open, you know, 4 days a week, Thursday through Sunday. So I got Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday.
Yeah.
That I could be off if I'm not working.
Yeah.
Air quotes. But I think that's important. You know, as a business owner, that might not be the best strategy. If I was in a different position with a stand-up shop that, you know, I'm paying rent and I gotta make things happen. Yeah, I can see being open 7 days a week. I can see being open 6 days a week. But back to the point of what do employees want, you know, I think it's important to try to find out up front, you know, what people do think is important, so that you can do a better job making sure that you're able to make it fit. There's some things that aren't negotiable. Like, you know, I had one guy come in a few weeks ago, and I asked him during the interview, like, would you be interested in working like a Friday morning shift or a Friday evening shift? And he said Friday mornings. And I'm like, in the back of my mind going, okay, well, I need people for Friday nights and I need people for Saturday nights. Like, I don't need someone there necessarily for a Friday lunch service unless I just don't want to be there. So then he came in for a day of training, did a good job. He was already a pizza maker. I said, I don't need to have you wait 3 days in training to give you a bump. I'm going to bring you up immediately. You don't need to be trained. You're a pizza maker. You've worked before. So then the next day he shows up and he had to leave early. He had to take care of some personal business related to some insurance, and no problem. And then I put him on the schedule for Friday and Saturday night. And I said, hey, you know, I don't know if you've signed up for the Square thing yet. I don't know if you've seen the schedule, but just let me know. I don't hear anything back from him. I text him again and say something about, you know, coming in.
Yeah.
Because I'm just feeling like this guy is not showing up, right?
Yeah.
And sure enough, he didn't. And I mean, talk about getting ghosted. I mean, you know, this guy doesn't owe me anything. It's a new job. People don't even owe anybody the courtesy of a, hey, thanks. But, you know, that's not the way I run it. right? Like, I let people know from the get-go, we're on a day-by-day basis. You come in for your first day of training, and if it works for me, we'll have you back. If it works for you and you want to come back, right? And we just kind of keep walking this walk. And, you know, you get someone to sign off on that. And, well, maybe they didn't sign off on it. Maybe I need to say, hey, will you let me know if it's not working out for you? You know, and, you know, anyway.
So I think, you know, a couple of things pop into mind. I'm wondering if, you know, your talent pool is broad enough. And, like, it's hard to find people who want to do the work. That's fair. I think where I'm thinking now is, like, what if you go headhunt people at different pizzerias and, like, steal them? Like, I don't want to encourage people stealing their best workers, but if you're, if any of your workers want to leave your current pizzeria to go to Drew's, then it may be on your pizzeria, right? I'm also thinking, when it comes down to it, people, it's like, you can only give people so much, and so you do have to hold the line down. And if they don't want to show up to work, they don't want to show up. I'm also thinking, what if you're just not at the point yet where you can make your first hire? Have you ever considered that?
As the business slows down now, I'm realizing that I probably literally don't need someone for 20 hours a week, meaning I don't need someone for lunch and dinner on Fridays and Saturdays. I might just need someone for dinner because that's when I do need the help. I mean, dude, the last night I was working by myself on a Friday night. One Friday after everybody left, I got through it. There were some par bakes that helped me out, but it was just a little bit of a slower night. And then the next Friday, you know, the business was back. I was literally quoting people 80 minutes for pizza because I was in there solo.
Where's your bottleneck? Like, why 80? Is it like there's too many orders coming at once?
It's dinner service. I mean, first of all, I can only get three pizzas in the oven at once. Second of all, how long does it take to make two pizzas from stretch to either into the oven or out of the oven? For me, it takes me 3 or 4 minutes to get a pizza from stretch to topped. So if that's two pizzas, that's 6 to 8 minutes plus 2 minutes in the oven. That's 10 minutes per two pizzas. You know, I can fit three in a time, but then you're going to have to add another maybe 3 minutes to the stretch and top. So, I mean, literally I quote about 15 minutes per three pizzas. So if I got 12 pizzas in front of me, that's about an hour, right? And at Crush, like everybody comes in at the same time. Everybody's coming in between 6:30 and 7:30 or 6 and 7. And even that night, I'm amazed that I only lose, like that night I may have lost 4 people tops, but on a normal night like that where we're quoting 60 minutes, people are coming to the market, they're vibing. They're going to be there with friends for 2 hours anyway. So they get their order in, they get their bottle of wine from the market, they're fine. So, you know, again, if I have the time in the day and I can get 12 pizzas parred out, and then that goes from a, you know, a 5 or 6 minute option to more like throw it in the oven and it's done. And trust me, those definitely save me, because if I didn't have 12 par bakes that night, I wouldn't even have had enough space on the ticket holder to post up all the tickets.
Okay, so I think the par bake thing, you're talking about like par baked round shells, right? And I want to go into that, because what if that is your key, right? And I'm talking about like, I don't know how busy your store has gotten. It sounds like it's picking up, and it sounds like more people are knowing about it, or more people are just entertaining the idea of, let me get food at Jackson Market and see what they have. Oh, Drew's there, I'm gonna get pizza, and it's a hot option versus a sandwich or whatever. But like, as your product continues to get better, more people will talk about your stuff, and they'll share it, and more people will be coming in. Do you think that the quality is suffering because you're pressed for time? Do you think that the quality is suffering, or just the experience is suffering because people are waiting so long? And do you think that by nailing down this par-bake situation, nailing down the times for a better experience, it will drive more business ultimately, and then give you some of the flexibility to open more days and hours or pay more? Not saying that those are the solutions, but I'm just like trying to see like what you could focus on in order to like take the next right step.
In terms of quality of experience with the wait times, there's a certain portion of that business that isn't too concerned with it. If they were concerned with it, or if they did have to drop somebody off at the airport, they obviously are not gonna be able to wait, right? If I'm only losing a couple people on that wait time, it means that at least for those people that are there, it's not impacting them greatly. It's an impact because maybe you come in at 6:30 and you're hungry and you want to eat and you want it faster.
That's an impact.
Which is understandable. And really, if I had to take a look at the whole business, like the wait time is the number one issue for me to work on, to improve, so that I don't even lose those two. So I don't even lose those four in the most extreme case, right? Let alone, I mean, if I was going in, like, yeah, no, I can chill out and we're having beers and, you know, 45 minutes later, but by 45 minutes, like, you want your pizza. The most critical thing with the wait time is not so much the wait time itself, but it's the estimation for the wait time. Because if I tell someone it's going to be 45 minutes and it's 60, obviously no bueno.
You lost your trust.
But yeah. If I tell someone, hey, I mean, we're looking at like 70 minutes right now, and like I literally nail that time, like the goodwill is still built in. I've only had one or two people, you know, complain that, hey, you know, you told me, and I'm like.
And the problem with you saying it's 70 minutes, but it ends up taking you 60 minutes is the person who hears 70 minutes, they may not even wait.
Right.
And so you really have to be on that.
Yes. So wait time is, as I said, top of the list. So then that gets me back into par bakes. I just might need to come in earlier and get started faster. When you asked me the question about experience, we were talking about par bakes initially. So I thought that was where the question was focused. And what I can say about what I'm doing with the par bakes and the quality of the par bakes. First of all, my opinion of the pizza like means absolutely nothing, zero, right? It's always about what the customer thinks, right? Because they're the ones that are paying the money, right? So I had a customer, this is a long time ago when I was first starting to play around with the par bakes. Because I told you my experience with the par bake when one of my mentors was doing it at his pop-ups was the first time I had his pizza at Italy in the big wood-fired dome ovens, some of the best pizza I've ever had in my life. When I went to his pop-up to see what he was doing with the ovens on site and finishing, I was like, I wasn't impressed. So from a foodie standpoint, I noticed, and I wasn't necessarily willing to support him in his new way of doing things because the product to me suffered. But I did take note of what he was doing from a business standpoint, which was essentially, well, now instead of going and setting up a kitchen and hand stretching on site, he's doing everything at his commissary, wood fired, finishing them in a rock box inside of a van. And I said, pizza-wise, I'm not as impressed. Business-wise, I'm gonna put this in the back of my head because I know this guy's a smart business guy. So I started doing it, and one day, one of my customers, who was a regular, pretty much a every Friday night type of family, said, hey, did you change something about the pizza? And I was like, this might be like a 24-hour ferment instead of like my standard 2 days in the fridge. And that was kind of like a half truth because I think the dough could have been like a 1 day shorter ferment. But really the truth of the matter was it was a par bake. And then I said, well, which one did you like better? And he said, well, I kind of like tonight's better because it was a little crunchier.
Yeah.
Right? So with the par bakes, it's in the oven twice. It does drive off a little bit more moisture. You are getting some good crunch on that pizza. You are getting some more, you know, structure on the bottom. And I think personally that most people are more familiar with that than they are with more of a Neapolitan, more of a spongy, more of a floppy. So I always ask people how the pizza is, whether it's a par bake or whether it's, you know, a one-time bake. And I don't think most people have much perception of what the difference is, even if they've had my pizza before. And I don't get any complaints saying, oh, you know, this, I take that back. One of the challenges with the par bake is because you're not putting it back in the oven for very long, and I do refrigerate them afterwards to get more of a safe handling situation, is if we bring those out of the fridge right away and they haven't kind of come to room temp, that if they're not in there for long enough, then maybe we're not getting melted cheese in the middle, or maybe toppings aren't. So there was an issue like that, but that was my son doing those pizzas.
Okay.
And a little bit less.
I mean, you can figure that out, right?
No, you can figure it out.
You can definitely figure that out. Like, if it means, like, if dinner service is from 5 to 9 and you have to take them out at 3 to be right, or no, you have to take half of them out at 3 and then half of them out at 5, you're good.
Yeah.
I guess I am of the understanding that, like, more revenue and profit will fix a lot of your problems.
Please, I'll take it.
Right? And I'm thinking, like, if the par bake works, shit, why not? And, like, yes, you may have to put your pride aside for the foodie stuff, right? Because, but you hear it all the time. Zaza's Pizza was like, we had to drop our hydration from 70% to 64% so that our staff can handle it more and we can just produce.
Right.
And does the customer notice? Maybe some. Does the chef notice? Hell yeah. But can you stand by your product, right? Can you be proud of it, and can it do good business for you? And I think that's what's important here, and might be, like, I think we were talking about this prior to this podcast, but I, like, saw somebody do the par baked and they were selling it as wood fired, and they were only doing par baked shells, and then they were topping and then selling it, and I was like, oh man, like, what? You're disrupting the, you're doing a disgrace to the art. And then I tried another pizzeria that did it as a mobile catering option. I actually worked the event and I tried the pizza and I was like, holy shit. Like, this isn't Neapolitan pizza. It's just their pizza. It's crispy. And, like, honestly, it was dummy proof. Anybody could do it, right? You par bake the shells out so clean, and then they just top it up and then cook it in, like, flash cook. And their business model worked. And so I'm just trying to figure out, like, how we can do that for you. Because I know you want to go from solo operator to empire builder, right? Not just a business owner, but you want to go from, you know, the four quadrants of Kiyosaki, from self-employed to business owner. And I get it. Right, but, like, to make that jump, and I'm sort of in that right now with the podcast, to make that jump, like, I think it has to be justified.
Well, the question I have related to the par bakes is, isn't that what every New York style slice shop does with every single one of their pizzas? It's all par baked.
100. And I just did a podcast with John Rose, Pizzeria Pizzeria. He pulls out the pizza and it's blonde as hell. And I'm just like, ugh. He shows me the slice after it's, like, reheated, because these pizzas are going into the slice case. And I'm like, it's still a little blonde, but also I tasted it myself. And I was like, you know what? It's crispy. It has great sauce, great cheese. Passes the what's good dough taste test.
I mean, you know? The bottom line is, if it's great pizza, we don't care where you started out and which angles you took after that, because there's a bunch of different ways of going from zero to the finish line. And as long as it's great pizza, you know, for the consumer, I mean, as long as you still have some pride and appreciation as the chef or the, you know, pizza cook, I think that's still also important. But there's a lot of different ways to get to great pizza.
You know, and a lot of different ways to get to a great business.
I'm thinking, you know, Detroit's, you know, there's so many different ways.
I would not go Detroit's with your oven. So, can you just bust out your unis and like on the table?
You know what? That was something that I didn't necessarily want to consider before, based on space and based on the fact that with the rock box, it's a little smaller and not quite as versatile. So I wasn't kind of seeing the possibilities as much. I told you I got that shredder deal at that auction. They had a countertop Baker's Pride with a new stone. And I do have an electrical plug that works because I have that one in the mixer. So it could have withstood some, you know, higher juice pull. And I was like, yeah, this is exactly what I want. So I can start rolling Detroit's. And then we get to the point, the oven ended up going for a little bit more than I was really comfortable at the time. But then again, like,
how much?
Early in the bidding, it was in the 300 to 400 range, and that was kind of where my comfort zone was. Late, right before it, you know, got hammered off, it was up to about $700.
And that's a double deck, single.
We're talking literally a countertop Baker's Pride, probably
gas. Electric.
Probably like 4 feet wide, probably like 2 feet high.
What size pizza can go in there? 18.
I'm sure that was probably like a 16-inch stone at least.
Pies aren't even that big.
No, but that would have been my Detroit thing.
I see.
But now it's like I'm having a hard enough time getting people their pizzas in the oven. Now I'm going to add Detroit to it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that. If you were going to do, if I'm purely thinking of increasing real estate for your main thing, and I'm thinking like, dude, I'll hook you up on the Uni Volts. I'll get you that discount. It'll probably be around like $600-$700, and it does 12-inch pizzas. That's one way. But I'm thinking like, put up your unis and like go from three pizzas to five.
I don't think the oven is my holdup.
Okay.
I think it's the making the pizzas.
Okay.
And
let's talk about that.
Yeah. So for me, the answer is if I had 24 par bakes on a Friday night, I think I would be
done.
Really in business, because then the only thing, I have six pizzas on the menu. My par bake approach is I make a couple of the hardest ones and the more timely ones to consume.
Uh-huh.
The one that's got the, you know, piped ricotta as the base, the sausage party where you're hand pulling 35 dime pieces of sausage, that's time. So if I can get a couple of those, when I get that, at least that cuts down.
Wait. That's not how we did it at the pizzeria that I worked at. And that's not how we did it at Ryan.
No, I told you, I do it differently. My pizza is completely topped.
Sure. No. But I guess what I'm saying is like, why not par bake like just a bunch of cheeses? Or why not, you know, when we at the pizzeria on Friday night, we would like make a bunch of cheese pizzas, and these weren't baked, but that, you know, like we had like four guys, bunch of oven space, but we had like speed racks. And we just made a bunch of cheese and pepperonis because we knew those were the most popular. But then the next most popular is like the combo, which already had cheese and pepperoni. The next popular was like the kitchen sink, which had cheese, pepperoni, plus addition of like other stuff. And like, we just built off of that.
What temperature was the oven?
The oven was at 500, 8 minute bake.
Okay, so 8 minute bake. So we have played around with making what we call blanks. So the par bake is completely a built pizza. The blank is a cheese and crust canvas that we can then top. Okay, I'm baking between 800 and 900 degrees. When that pizza goes back in the oven with the crust and the cheese already parred out, it doesn't need 2 minutes, right? To get back to, you know, being warmed and melted. So then those additional toppings now are on a sub 2 minute back in the oven. So no way you're gonna put sausage on it. No way you're gonna put raw sausage. Maybe not even put raw pepperoni. And don't you want those veggies to get a little bit warm through too? So for me—
What about par cooking veggies? Par cooking sausage? Like, I'm trying to get you to...
No, I was doing... Yeah. I was baking off all my sausage before, and then one of my Wolfgang Puck chef friends came in and...
Talk shit.
You know, he was like, you know, if you bake it, like, trust me...
The juices.
The pan shows you all the meat juice, all the fat.
Yeah, all the flavor.
It's gone. So I made... After he said that...
You can do the Dan Richard Rotza thing, where he makes pork gelatin... And then sprinkles it on the pizza so that it melts in.
Pork gelatin.
Dude, yes.
Oh my goodness.
Like, if you think about it, like all the little fat pieces, you could just sprinkle that on or brush it, and there's your flavor.
Trust me, I hate to throw anything out. And for the first couple months I was down there, every time I'd par-bake the chicken sausage, I would save the grease. Every time I'd par-bake the pork. So I had these vats because I was going to use it for something. And... Now, it's like, even if you're par cooking pepperonis to put on a Detroit, and then you got all that pepperoni grease, like, sure. What can you do with that? You gotta do gelatin.
There's a pizzeria in, I think it's Tony Bologna's. They do the pepperoni ranch. They'll get the grease, mix it in with a ranch, and then throw it on top. It looks so gross, but so good. I have not tried par cooking pizzas like that, but I mean, a bunch of businesses do. I'd want to try that.
I'm telling you.
I see what you're saying about like par baking, being more mindful of par baking just cheese and pepperonis. That's fair.
For your catering, you're going to have to try it at least once to see, again, your customers, they're going to love your pizza no matter what. But for you, you're going to realize, okay, I'm schlepping down the canopy. I'm schlepping down two tables for prep. I'm schlepping around 16 ingredient cups, shredded cheese, trying to keep things cold. And you know, the two catering events I did, you know, the first one I did, it was, you know, I have the oven and everything's at the shop. So to par bake stuff at the shop, super convenient. And then when I took it down, I'm telling you, it was a party of 50. So we must've had, you know, roughly the equivalent of 25 pizzas. And we were done finishing pizzas in like an hour and 15 minutes. 25 pizzas finished, hour and 15 minutes. For me, at least, as far as catering, you got your choice. Either you can cater the way I do it, or if I'm gonna come down and hand stretch, instead of me quoting you one pizza for two people, I'm quoting you one pizza for one person. So your catering cost is gonna double if you want the experience. Now, some people might, and some people might just want, you know, pizza when it's dinner time. So.
I mean, you could make an argument, like, this is the experience. Like, are Detroit pizzas that are par-baked half the experience because they're par-baked? So, I mean, it's the same thing. You're like a par-baked shell or a par-baked pizza that's reheated is gonna be just as hot if you can nail down your time and temps. It's not as flashy, I get it, but is it half the price? I don't know. I think you could charge more. I've seen people charge more.
Trust me, my baseline catering to even give people the benefit of the doubt, because I'm quoting people what people are going to eat, right? Most people are going to eat half of a pizza.
Sure, that's fair.
Especially if it's with a salad or maybe an appetizer. So, you know, for me not to be quoting straight off, like, oh yeah, 40 people, I'll do 40 pizzas. And yeah, then you can take a bunch of pizza home. The smart business guy would probably be starting there. And then if you want to spend more and have me hand stretch on site, well, now instead of charging you 100%, of a pie cost per, maybe now I'm charging $150. So instead of $20 per person, like $30 a head.
You're gonna have to listen to the newest episode that I drop in December. We're weighing the pros and cons of charging per head versus charging per pizza.
Yes.
And it's a great debate. I will say that I'm still on the fence, but after having talked with him about charging per pizza and just charging a premium per pizza, I'm almost leaning towards that. And we don't have to go deep into that today, but I will say, like, this is the fun part about business, right? It's like, we said it's hard and it sucks, but also, like, it's fun figuring it out.
It is fun figuring it out. those are the challenges that, you know, make the day worth getting up. Because if it's the same old grind, then, you know, you're not growing. Your business probably isn't growing. And it's just not as fun as anymore. Like, you know, being...
Can we walk and talk?
Yep.
Being what?
Being, you know, in the pizza business... It's creative, the menu is creative, and if there isn't stuff associated with the business too that's equally creative, I think it just gets a little bit boring.
No, that's fair. And like, I know you have your heart set on like being a business owner. I know just naturally we all want like the thrill of new stuff. And we like don't gravitate towards the mundane, but I mean, like, I'm trying to find the joy in that. I'm like, I don't have an editor anymore, right? I had multiple editors throughout most of the year, and I'm just like at a point right now where I'm like being back to being self-employed, quote unquote, and just editing the podcast and trying to like, even though this, it feels redundant, even though I feel that pressure, even though my time is now more spread than ever, I'm also like trying to find the enjoyment of editing these podcasts a bit better, or getting back into the swing of like throwing my own flair, choosing the music, all of that. And I'm hoping that it makes me a better editor, but I'm also hoping that it makes me a better boss, because I know more about what I want in my next hire. Like, I thought I knew what I wanted in my last however many hires for the podcast, but then even when I had them, there were still some moments where I was like, huh, I didn't think about this situation. Like, what am I to do? How am I to coach, right? But having more episodes edited under my belt, I'm starting to like see, oh, this is how I want things done. Versus, oh, you have experience, you can do it, and let's have you do it first, I'll check it, and we'll be good. And I start losing that touch, that connection with a podcast in that way. I was. And I feel like that is part of the struggle of moving from that self-employed to the business owner, is that you do lose that touch, but like, honestly, I feel like people have to adopt the touch that you've built into the business. And I don't think I had that. And which is why I was saying, like, what if now isn't the time to be a business owner just yet? Just food for thought. I'm not saying don't do it, but I am saying that's where I'm at.
Just like you said, when you do drop back in and you're doing things by yourself, that's going to help you on the other side of it when you are working with other people. So I'm taking what you said in. And even though I might not have processed it 100% before you said it, there has been a thought in my mind of like, you know, being happy that I'm back at my one person shop again.
Yes.
By myself.
For sure.
And I made it work. Yes. Like, if you would have asked me whether I could have done, you know, a 1K night by myself, you know, 3 months
ago,
good
for you, dude.
I would have been like, absolutely no way. And then I got to see that I could do it. So again, we think we know what we can do, right up until the point where we know we can do much more.
Oh, dude,
and
yes.
Isn't that the stretch that
we have
to be doing?
Hell yes. Dude, the last three nights, man, as a sleep-deprived parent, I stayed up past one getting all of my edits done. Every single night, 1 a.m. My bedtime before that was 10, and I've just been so tired lately, and yet, I have a new sponsor. I have a bunch of episodes that I'm recording. I'm like in a hustle, and I feel like I'm in this hustle because I want to have a little bit more of a kickback December, right? And so I'm just grinding it out now. And I know that like I'm happy doing it because this is what I want to be doing. I know that it's only making me stronger. I know that I'm stretching my limits, and that's what it takes. I'm not like saying we have to grind it out. But with the lifestyle that I'm living right now, I'm super happy. I'm super happy that I get to edit during the day, hang out with my baby in the afternoon, and then go back to editing when she's asleep. And like, okay, cool, let's run it, right? and then this will only make me better. Feels great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, your phrase of leveling it up, like, we're talking about what that actually means, right? Because you do something that you don't know you were capable of, and you did it, and you're like, oh, wow, I got here. And then you're going to do that process again with something else, and then you just never go back. Like, yeah, man, I've wanted to be a business owner all my life and think that I can do it. And then you're in the trenches and you're like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this or not. And then you kind of get through that. And then you go to that next thing and you're like, wow, I can do this too. And like, think about how many levels we're away from our potential because
100%.
We're so comfortable.
Hell yeah.
So.
Final question for you, man. What's good dough?
Oh, what's good dough? What's good dough is being in this business, having good days, having bad days, and just like we just finished talking about, what's good dough is finding something in yourself that you didn't know that you were capable of, and then checking it off the box and realizing that I'm not done here either. I have so much more potential that I haven't had the courage, the discipline, or maybe even the knowledge of the possibilities. But when you're in it and you keep grinding and you have a place that you want to get to, up the mountain, up the ladder, and you just keep taking one day at a time, one step at a time, you're not looking at the destination, but you're in the moment, and you realize, and you turn around and you look back and you're like,
whoa.
Wow, man, are you serious? I am right here, right now. And Idriff, I'm at like month 16. When I was at 6 months, I was like, man, I don't know if I'm ever gonna make it to a year. When I got to the year point, so many good things happened. Pizza Today, Rising Stars. You know, I was on your podcast after working a little bit to, you know, try to get you to have me on. And then, you know, things are going good, but then, whoa, now I've had some setbacks. And, you know, the setbacks aren't going to hold me back. They're just going to be something that you grind through. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll be talking around the 24-month mark or the 26-month mark. And both of us are going to be like, holy smokes, man. I didn't think that was going to happen. Congratulations.
You're on the podcast again. We're just grinding.
Good seeing you, man.
Drew, thank you so, so much for being back on the show. I know the listeners will appreciate you being open and vulnerable till we talk again. And to you, the listener, I hope you enjoyed this one. Let me know what your thoughts are. Let me tell you why I like this one. Again, casual conversation, me and Drew just going back and forth. There's something about the in-person opportunities with me and a pizza maker that just are really fun, different, and unique. So I hope you appreciate that. It's not as like streamlined of a conversation, but we just go where the conversation flows. I'll try to do more of these because I think they are beneficial, but do let me know your thoughts. And do let Drew know your thoughts too. Let him know what's good dough. I'll link his Instagram in the show notes. Couple of announcements. Please remember to sign up for our email list. There's a link in the show notes for that, or you can go on my website. That way you get notified when there's a new show. We'll go ahead and send you the show notes. You can read through them real quick. And if it's a show for you, it's a show for you. If not, tune in next week. But I hope it is a show for you, all right? Finally, if you haven't done so already, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps so much. It really does. Thank you so, so much for all the love and support. I appreciate you. I love you. Till next time. Peace.